Our reading from Peter this morning alerts us to this idea that Jesus entrusted himself to the one who he trusted judged justly. Like any of our readings on any Sunday morning, you know, I've always got decisions to make about what we focus on. And you might think that we would focus on one of the most straightforward and famous statements about substitutionary atonement that there is in the New Testament here in 1 Peter. But as your pastor, I'm kind of guessing that the vast majority of you in here know something about substitutionary atonement. Probably been hearing about it your whole Christian life. So I thought we might focus this morning rather on the notion that Jesus died in our place, paying for our sins, that sort of thing, that we might focus instead on the outcome that Peter talks about. So if you look at, I think it's verse 24 in your bulletin, after it says that Christ died in our place, there's this word that is meant to alert us to what were the supposed outcomes, what was going to happen from this. And there are two things there. One, that we might die to sin, and two, that we might live to righteousness. And I want to suggest this morning that it's this dying and living that Peter has in mind. That's the thing that funds or undergirds this ability to entrust ourselves to him who judges justly. And I want to say that this is no small issue. That trusting other sorts of power explains in part the cycle of wars. And it explains the cycle of violence in families. And it explains hurt hearts and friendships. And it explains the rather common, brutal harshness of much of the human workplace. But what if our world, and what if our responses to our world, are not limited to retaliation and getting even? And if you can think back, I know it's been a few weeks, but if you can think back to our readings leading up to Easter, Peter came to this conclusion pretty hard. This was not an easy thing for him. It was with great pain and confusion and maybe even some depression that he watched the Jesus events unfold. And he didn't get it. And he was afraid. But now he's reflecting on this. Some years have passed and he's reflecting. And he's inviting these, his first readers, you know, these ones who've been suffering unjustly themselves, he's inviting them into a kind of life, into a kind of mindset that Jesus had. And there's a very wonderful kind of well-known Greek word in this passage that's translated pattern or example. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, kind of connect the dots on a restaurant, you know, kids menu. Or if you're teaching kids to make letters, you might say, now this is an R, and you show them exactly how to trace an R. Or it could be something like a blueprint that an architect creates that someone is then supposed to mimic as they build it. That's the kind of underlying thought here. So Peter, I want you to just try to feel this. Peter wrestled as these events unfolded before him. He did not get it. It made no sense to him that Jesus seemed to be trusting this unseen reality and giving himself to the harshest brutality. It made literally no sense to Peter. Now he's thought about it, he's kind of reconciled himself to it, and now it's like a 180 degree turn, he now presents it to his readers as an example. Well, I want to help us think about this morning, why would Jesus have done such a thing? He could have defended himself. I mean, with a word, he withered trees. With a calm voice, he stilled raging storms. He sent demons fleeing and raised the dead with his voice. So he could have defended himself. So why did he choose this road? And I want to say that he had an unfair start over us. I mean, having come from the councils of the Holy Trinity, you know, as the second person of the Godhead, having come to earth from that reality, he had kind of a head start on us. But if you can set that aside for a moment, what I want you to hear from that, though, is can you feel the kind of knowledge he had? Can you imagine the knowledge of God? that then would have funded or enabled an imagination that could have allowed himself to entrust himself to the one who he knew. He didn't just believe doctrinally or believe because he'd heard a Sunday school teacher say it. Remember, I've told you before, those kind of beliefs are not adequate to build a life on. You can only build your life on knowledge. You can only act according to knowledge. And Jesus was acting according to a knowledge that he knew, my Father is the one who judges justly. Well then, for us, not being, you know, coming out of the Holy Trinity, and bursting into this life, what would be the state of a normal human being who would entrust their lives to the one who judges justly? And I want to suggest that this action by Jesus came from his whole person. And this is why in the Gospels, he taught us to love the Lord your God with your whole person, heart, soul, mind, and strength, and neighbor as yourself, that is to say, your social self. And I want to say that Jesus' actions, in this case, in our actions, in whatever case, these arise out of an interaction of these aspects of our person, heart, soul, mind, strength, body, social self. Our actions actually arise out of what's going on in this unseen inner dimension of us. Well, so as we go through these things, I want us to wonder, what was it like for Jesus in each of these things? So let's take heart. I mean, simply put, heart simply refers to the center of our being. The heart is something like the executive center where we make decisions and we coordinate all the other dimensions of our life. Our heart is the thing that brings our mind and will and soul and those things into action. And so for Jesus, if you just, again, I want this to be an imaginative exercise this morning. So imagine a heart that's not full of vengeance, with no reflective need to retaliate. For Jesus, hurting others was not his knee-jerk response to being hurt. He possessed a humility that claimed no right for vindication. Soul. Soul's difficult, but let's for this morning just say that it's referring to the non-physical dimension of a person. You could say that it is us as a person, but we can't get into all that this morning. And that within this non-physical dimension of the person, that's the place from which initiation and creation comes. And so what could we imagine about Jesus? I would say something like this, that he was conscious, as I said, of a Father whose essential being was completely competent love. He was the loving creator God. And thus Jesus knew in his soul freedom and security and the joy of living in utter dependence on his Father. Now, can we just keep it real here for a minute? Can we just admit that for most of us, learning utter dependence hasn't felt like joy? Right? I mean, I just know if we were doing word association and I said learning utter dependence on God, not very many people would say joy. Right? It feels hard. It's counterintuitive. Everything in us seems bent against it. But for Jesus, you know, he didn't on the cross when he said, Father, forgive them for they know not what they're doing. Do you realize that he didn't say that through gritted teeth? Like, you know, he really wanted to say the little SOBs. But he thought, well, somebody's going to write this down, so I better say. You know, given social media and all, somebody's sure to tweet this out. So, you know, I'll say the politically correct thing. No, what I want you to try to feel this morning is that for Jesus to curse would have gone against everything who he was. He didn't say through gritted teeth, Father, forgive them. He was full of a generosity that knew that even in that moment he was safe. What about mind? Well, mind typically represents our thoughts and feelings. It's the place where we have ideas and images of God. Feelings, you know, these things, we experience them as spontaneous and involuntary. They move us in one direction or another, such that for some people, hatred, that feeling, imprisons their minds. Feelings can warp a soul and cause us to use our strength to harm another. Or there can be feelings of joy and peace, which of course lead us in other directions. And so again, if you think, try to imagine, as the second person of the Holy Trinity, what do you think were Jesus' ideas and images of God? And then think this, that what we naturally and easily think is what governs our actions. Not doctrines we've heard, or things that you think you ought to believe. No, you need to hear that deeply. Because the vast majority of Christians I've known in my now long career have normally tried to work out of oughts or shoulds. And again, I want to say they're not strong enough to build a life on. They're fleeting at best. And we can't actually build a life on oughts and shoulds. But what we naturally think, this is what we act out of. And I want to say, though it was probably a beautiful, something like a psalm or a hymn or a song, Philippians 4:8, but there was a very clear kind of passionate reason that Paul wrote, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable or excellent or worthy of praise, think on these things. What Paul's doing there is he's kind of saying in a gentle way that he knows what I know, that people act out of what they most easily and routinely think. But again, I know us kind of evangelical, you know, Bible Christians. I know us. And I know that this text can often sound like little more than religious jargon. Seriously, it's like jargon. I mean, I think if I'd have written that paragraph, an editor would have said back to me, Todd, that's jargon. I'm serious. I mean, that's the way it sort of hits our minds and souls, that it feels like jargon. Unless or until you're trying to become the kind of person for whom entrusting your life to the one who judges justly is what you're aiming for. And when that happens, you cannot allow yourself bad thoughts about God. It won't work. Now, I don't mean the sort of fleeting things that we can't control. I've already said that most we experience our emotions as involuntary and spontaneous. I get all that. I'm talking about lingering. I'm talking about the things that come to you naturally and routinely. If your natural and routine thoughts about God are that he's not trustworthy or that he's capricious or that he's not with you or he doesn't seem to care about you, well, then that's what you're going to act out of. But Paul says, rather than just letting yourself go that way intuitively, set your hearts and minds on these other things. So what do we think would have been the mind of Jesus? Do you think his mind would have been filled with bad thoughts about his father? Well, of course not. And unthreatened by evil, he was then able to leave his destiny in the hands of God. And then Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your strength. Our strength is our bodily life. It's our capacity to carry out the decisions of our heart and mind and soul. And so again, Jesus' bodily strength was set by his heart and his mind and his will to be a source for good. So if you were to actually just go through the synoptics or John or whatever someday and just read them and looking at what Jesus did with his body, you would find that with the rare exception of overturning tables or scattering money changers, with a rare exception that simply proves the rule, people experience Jesus' bodily life as for their good. He radiated from his countenance, from his tone of voice, from his posture. He radiated the goodness and power and love of God. And then finally, if we're going to think through who would be the kind of person who could actually entrust their lives to God, Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. And this means to call to mind the social dimensions of our life through which others feel the current arrangement of our hidden inner selves as we interact with them. I need to say that again. when Jesus is getting at loving your neighbor, see, he's talking about you, love your neighbor. He's talking about social interactions. And these interactive moments, they express to others what is the present alignment or the present arrangement of our hidden inner selves as we interact with them. So again, it would have gone against everything in Jesus to have harmed anyone, even those who were beating and despising him. I mean, I don't imagine Jesus ever actually said this, but I just always picture it this way. When James and John come running up to him and say, "Jesus, should we call down lightning from heaven?" And I can just always picture Jesus going, "Oy vey," you know, like, "How long have I been with you?" You see, it would have gone against everything in him to be the source of harm. So I want to say this morning, as we try to think through this business of what would be the inner reality of someone who was able to entrust their lives to him who judges justly, I think one of the headlines I want to leave you with is that we live at the mercy of our ideas. And that this is never more true than our ideas about God. And that for a lot of us, our ideas about God leave us living spiritually claustrophobic and bound and trapped and caught by the limits of our thinking about God. And so I want to give you what I hope today will be an alternative idea, maybe a thought that you can carry around with you for a long time. And that's this. Every form of life, whether a broccoli plant or an alligator, every form of life lives in and from a certain world to which it is suited. So you take broccoli out of the ground, take it from the world to which it's suited and from which it derives its life, take it out of the ground, it withers and dies. You take an alligator out of the swamp and put it in the desert, it dies. Every form of life derives its life from and lives it in something to which it is suited, and cut off from this special world, it languishes and it eventually dies. Now, here's one of the most important and I think sort of gracious things, not my grace, but God's grace, one of the most gracious things I've ever had the privilege of saying to you. This is how our call to spirituality comes to us. It does not come to us from legalisms or moralisms or behavior or religion. It is the greatest invitation you will ever hear in your life. That if we want to really live, then we are in every aspect spiritual. The spiritual world is our world. Even while living bodily, the spiritual world, the unseen world of God and our hidden and inner connections with him, that's the world to which we are suited. We are not suited to the flesh, as the Bible talks about, but careful here, flesh doesn't mean this. Especially for Paul, who's the one who uses the word the most, flesh means something like this: the aspects of the human being misaligned with God or bent against God. And this is why Paul says in Romans 8, knowing what Jesus knows, that it's the spiritual world from which we derive life, and outside of that spiritual life, we languish and we die. Paul says, letting your sinful nature control your mind leads to death, right? Romans 8. Letting your sinful nature control your mind leads to death, but letting the Spirit control your mind, and I would add, heart, will, soul, social self, that leads to life and peace. And so Jesus came among us to show us and to teach the life for which we were made, and how by relying on his word and his example and his present presence with us, we are enabled to then reintegrate our life. Heart, soul, mind, body, will, social self, we're able to reintegrate all of that into his life as spiritual beings, deriving our life from He who is Spirit, and then living this life out in our physical realm. But it's the spiritual realm to which we are suited. And that is the eternal kind of life. When Jesus says, I've come to give you eternal life, or when Jesus says things, I've come to give you things like abundant life, that he says he came to offer us, this is what he means. So who is the kind of person who could entrust their lives to the one who judges justly? Even when all kinds of bad things are going on around us, I want to suggest it's the one who knows in their heart and mind and soul and strength and in their social selves that they're always safe in the kingdom of God. And thus, rather than harming others, they've learned to entrust their lives to Him who judges justly.